This week on Making Contact.
It is the powerless women, it is the excluded women, women at the very local level, who have been able to demonstrate throughout history that the African people have a dignity, the African people have a life.
The impoverishment of African nations is widely recognized by the international community, but how many know the daily reality and hardships of African women? On this edition of Making Contact, we'll hear from African women leaders who say the dignity of people in the developing world is depleting. During the January 2005 World Social Forum, they proposed alternatives to the root causes of suffering. I'm Justin Beck, your host this week on Making Contact, an international radio program creating connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. At the 5th World Social Forum in January 2005, over 150,000 social changemakers met in the event's birthplace, Porto Alegre, Brazil. The annual week-long international summit provides a space for activists to generate proposals for a more just and sustainable world. On the opening day of the forum, Kenyan activist Njoki Njehu and member of the forum's international council explained the event's philosophy.
At the World Social Forum, we say that another world is possible, and it's not just a nice slogan. We mean it. We live it every day. We are building that other possible world. We are fighting for workers' rights. We are fighting for human rights. We are fighting for immigrant rights. We are fighting for all the rights of education, of water, of health, of shelter. We are fighting it for debt cancellation. It is outrageous that when the creditors of the world got together, they seemed to be the only ones who were not touched by the devastation of the tsunami. They got together and decided to come up with a moratorium on debt. The world has spoken very clearly that it is about 100% cancellation of the debt. The debt has been paid. The debt is illegitimate. The debt is odious. And we come to the World Social Forum because we know that we cannot allow our struggles, the people's struggles and liberation movements, to time and time again be subjugated to the market, to the rules of the World Trade Organization, to the structural adjustment programs of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. We are in this struggle for the long haul. It is called the World Social Forum process for a reason. It is a process. We are in the process for the long haul. We can win our struggles. We do win our struggles. And change does come. The future is here with us, but also in looking forward. And in looking forward, we are looking at how we spread the World Social Forum process. Thank you.
That was Kenyan activist Njoki Njehu. The Eastern African nation of Kenya has an external debt of more than $600 billion. Strapped by the repayment of this enormous sum, the Kenyan government spends 13 times more on its debt than on healthcare, and 4 times more than it spends on education. Kenyan feminist Wahu Kara is director of the Kenya Debt Relief Network, an organization that educates the public about the social impact of the country's debt. At the World Social Forum 2005, Kara discussed the making and unmaking of dignity from the perspective of the African New Women's Movement.
Dignity is the manifestation of being alive. It is the life that nobody can take away from you, especially when you are ready and prepared to deal with that life. And I say this because of the experience we have had in Africa. We have been able to survive because we have been able to be custodian of that dignity as African women. So, Our greatest challenge today is how we connect the remnants of that custody all over the world. And it would be so easy to overthrow and to get rid of this very sophisticated militarized power which has lost life and which has nothing to detect what life is or where life is. And in that way, we will not even need to shoot at anybody or to engage with anybody militarily, because the power of the people of the world will be so enormous. And I say this because when I look at the African movement or the African women's movement in Kenya, I continue to be more inspired. And especially now that the African women have come out very clearly and saying, at least Africa is not going to, or the African women are not going to die for Africa, but they shall live for Africa. I wish to repeat that. And it is the powerless women, it is the excluded women, it is the very, very so-called grassroots or women at the very local level who have been able to demonstrate throughout history that the African people have a dignity, the African people have a life. When they came for us as slaves and took away all the strong men and took away all our culture and took away the stability of our communities, it is the women who were left with many contradictions of how they were going to play a double role of the both men and women to keep the custody of the African people's dignity. We were able to do so, and that's why I'm here. They came second around with colonialism and conquered us, but we resisted, and the African women broke the cultural barriers, and hand in hand, we joined our men, and we were able to resist. A classic example is my own country with the Mau Mau War, and we were able to tell the British, enough is enough, and they went. And in the process, we were able also to overcome the cultural barriers that were tying us, and we begin to engage with the market paradigm that is so much sophisticatedly designed today with the wheeling of finance capital. So what am I saying today at this level of globalization? The structural adjustment programs, the focus of using Africa once again in the new redefinition of the world order, in recolonizing us once again. I want to bring hope to this hall and say, they could be planning that, but I'm saying the new movement, especially where women's roles and action are involved, is a big challenge to the question of this unequal freedom in the name of democracy. And the African women have come up with very creative alternatives to be able to sustain life. I say very creative alternatives because many of our African economic country budgets have nothing to offer the women or the ordinary people. The economies are tied to the question of aid, to the question of debt, and much of the economy pays debts at the expense of looking at the social concerns of its own people. So that has given once again the women to be able to come up with the strategies of using the cultural value of unity of purpose and the role that society has given us of motherhood to take care and nurture life. And the women are mobilizing together the resources they have, but fundamentally the spirit that they have to be able to sustain life. And that is becoming a very strong alternative. A very strong alternative in which powerlessness is beginning to be power in itself. Exclusiveness is beginning to be power in itself. And what is very important is how we connect that powerlessness and be allow it to come on board to appear as the basis of our own power for engagement. My greatest happiness was that the spirit of resistance, the spirit of sustaining life, the spirit that no force can be able to take, including death in itself, because if you die a spirited person, you leave something behind to those who are carrying on the struggle. And it is that spirit, therefore, of the value for life. And I repeat again, it is that spirit of the value for life that is going to be our guiding principle to engage with awkward, outdated value for profit that has dehumanized the whole paradigm as it dictates on us today. So, for me, and that's why the construction of the women's movement, especially from the African perspective, is very, very critical today, because as the African women, we are working very hard to also liberate our own men who are already besieged by this paradigm as agents of it. And that is very, very important. And that's why you see our leaders are disconnected from us, because of the co-option that has been there since slavery to today. And it is in view of this, therefore, that I am saying, in many words or in very few words, that what is very, very important for the dispossessed and the powerless is to realize that they hold something that the world is looking for. And at this level, it's our duty and responsibility to guarantee that at least the last strength of life is not commodified and does not become collateral for the powerful of today. And it is in respect of that that I'm saying a new awakening in Africa is waking, and the women are at the forefront this time around, not to be co-opted for the agency of sustaining the paradigm, but to give the alternatives. Remember, women in development was provoked by what was happening in Africa during the time we were getting independence. Gender in development is just but a small screen to derail us. And at this juncture, we are talking alternatives. The alternatives are with the women. And I'm a witness that the women in Africa have perfected constructive skills to sustain life, whereas the men have perfected their destructive skills as they serve the market paradigm. It is only for us to take this opportunity and take the lead to connect the value for life.
That was Kenyan feminist Wahu Kara. We'll have more about African women at the World Social Forum in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for cassette or CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. South Africa has the widest income gap between rich and poor of any other nation in the world. Since the end of apartheid, South Africa's government has enabled the privatization of basic services like water and electricity. Community organizer Virginia Setshedi says privatization only worsens the standard of living for the nation's poor. Setshedi is a founding member of the Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee, a Cape Town-based grassroots organization. She spoke at the 5th annual World Social Forum about the poor's lack of access to services and South Africa's repertoire of resistance.
The problem in Africa that we are faced with is the issue of the debt. The debt that is killing us, the debt that is making sure that we don't have the dignity and we don't have the life that we're supposed to have. Because most of the money that is supposed to be used into providing better life for us is taken into paying the foreign debt. And the problems become that we don't have access to water, we don't have access to electricity, we don't even have access to land, we don't even have access to education and healthcare. And in our constitution, there's a clause that says everyone has a right to dignity. But our dignity is taken away because the mere fact that you don't have water, you don't have dignity. Our water is being given to a corporation to make more profit, and that corporation is not worried about how we live or how we survive. Instead, they're making sure that they're making more profit, and we have to pop out money for ourselves to have water. And what we see in our communities or in our places is that people live without water. People live with a minimum amount of water because they don't have money to go and buy. And therefore, if you don't have water, you can't take a bath. If you don't have water, you can't cook. If you don't have water, you can't have sanitation. Your dignity is being taken away. Again, even with electricity, our electricity is being commercialized and the corporations are making a lot of profits. And the better life that we're supposed to have is taken away bit by bit. If you don't have electricity, you use coal, you use dangerous energy sources. That threatens your life, threatens your health. And in most cases, we have a situation where people get burnt down because they were using candles and because they don't have electricity. And the dignity issue becomes important as well, because for you to be able to study as a student or as a learner at school, you must have electricity so that you can gain more dignity and be able to be accepted in the society that you are someone who went to school. But also the issue of education is being taken away. There's a lot of money and profits that are being made out of these things and these services that we're supposed to be getting, because the corporations are making a lot of profits and making a lot of money, while our rights, our human rights, our basic human rights are being sold to the same corporations. And as a result, we are left out and continue to be marginalized. The healthcare system, it's a problem. Our hospitals, you go to a hospital with a headache, you go there and you get more diseases and you die. Because there are no medicines, there are no doctors, and there are no nurses. Most of our hospital employees, they move from our country to London because there's better wages or salaries there, because our government is not prepared to provide better salaries so that they can also have dignity working in the hospitals. And the most serious and very sad thing is the issue of HIV/AIDS. 9 out of 10 people die of HIV/AIDS in our society. Half of the people that I know are dying of HIV/AIDS. My sister died in 1997 of HIV/AIDS. And we took her to a hospital one day, and the following day we came back to a hospital and we found her just like the way she was the previous day. No one was looking after her. She didn't have treatment. She didn't have a blanket that covers her. She didn't even have someone to to make sure that she goes to the bathroom and be looked after. And the sad part is, even though HIV/AIDS is dangerous, but the most dangerous thing is to go to the hospital and get more sick and die, because there is no health care that is sufficient and also good for people to be taken care of. And it is sad because we think about HIV/AIDS, and HIV/AIDS has become a very important topic or subject in South Africa. People are doing lots sorts of campaigns, and there's lots of talks about HIV/AIDS. But the sad part is that our government, our president, it took him time to realize that HIV/AIDS is a killer. It took him time to take an action so that people can be able to be cured for HIV/AIDS. And there's also a very huge connection between access to electricity, access to water, access to land, access to housing with the issue of HIV/AIDS. Because even if you do get treatment, how do you take the treatment if you don't have water? How do you make sure that you cook for yourself a healthy diet if you don't have electricity? And where do you live? Do you live on the roads or on the streets because you don't have housing and dying of HIV/AIDS? Those are the issues that we are faced with in our countries and in most African countries. But having said that, it is important for me to say that people continue to reclaim their dignity. People continue to take up the struggles and say, enough is enough. People continue to say, it's our right to have water, it's our right to have electricity, it's our right to go to school and be educated like everyone else. There are organizations that have been coming up and organizing and making sure that even though the state or the government is trying by all means to arrest the comrades, to arrest those who are challenging the system, people are continuing to say enough is enough, and we have to reclaim this right. We have to reclaim our dignity because no one is prepared to give it to us. And it is important for us to know that the issue of dignity cannot be isolated from the fact that we need to continue reclaiming it. Because if you don't reclaim it, people sort of forget that you have to have dignity. And it is sad that we had 1994 elections in South Africa where people were shouting better life for all. But now it is better life for the few. It is better life for those who have money. The gap between the rich and the poor is continuously widening because the rich are becoming richer and the poor are becoming poorer.
That was community organizer Virginia Setshedi. Nancy Kanyingwe is a Zimbabwean feminist who has been working for the human rights of Africans since her graduation from university. Affiliated with several economic justice and development organizations, Kanyingwe also runs the Mwengo Civil Society, an advocacy program. At the World Social Forum, Kanyingwe proposed ways to empower women changemakers.
The first thing I just wanted to say is I find one of the problems in terms of how the anti-globalization debates deal with the impact on gender misses out one of the big issues, which to me is that really we talk a lot about how it impacts women negatively, but we don't talk enough about how if there were not women there, the whole system would fall apart. So in fact, the only reason why our societies are holding together with this onslaught of globalization is because women are there every day fighting to hold communities together. And I think this is something that we need to hammer on and hammer on and boast about all the time, because maybe part of the reason why we're sidelined is because there isn't enough value given to our contribution in that sense. We're seen as just victims. The other aspect of that particular point, I think, is for us to emphasize that globalization needs voiceless, depressed, poor women to be able to continue to carry the burden of the destruction it is wrought on societies. So if there's a failure of us collectively as men and women to fight globalization, we are actually aiding it. So a collective effort to empower women means, in that sense, we are also fighting globalization because we are building the forces of struggle against it. The second point I'd like to say is that I think at this stage, and I know in Africa it's certainly true, the feminist movement is really in the process of rebuilding, reinventing, recreating, redefining itself and getting itself understood. There's been a lot of talk about women's rights and equality, but very many people don't really understand and haven't even read a lot of what feminist thinkers have done and said. Even all the feminist analysis around economies, politics, and how patriarchy operates, people don't know enough about that. So I think we need to make a concerted effort to get more information and education out there. We can't assume that just because people believe in women's equality, they understand what feminism is really about. So I think there's need for more discussion around that collectively. But I would also like to plead with all those who are involved in the feminist movement to also help for us to educate both women and men in the course of that about other issues like the economy, like trade, like militarization, because very often women feel these are not subjects, finance, money, the economy, that are their subjects. They think they should just be dealing with health and education and so forth. So we need to get into those spaces. If we want to get rid of our own poverty, we need to understand how money and resources and capitalism work much more. And my last point is maybe to re-emphasize our value. I think at the end of the day, if we try and analyze the reasons why in our own progressive movements, men are able to simply say, well, you know, sorry, we can't have your women's assembly this year, has a lot to do with the fact that they don't particularly feel that there's a value in it, and they don't feel there's a consequence if they ignore it. The perception is that they don't really need to support it. So we've got to find a way of being able to say, first of all, there is a value in this, and to get them to understand in whatever way we can do that. If at least there's a consequence to ignoring us, then people will think twice before they reject our demands.
That was human rights advocate Nancy Kanyingwe speaking in January 2005 at the World Social Forum in Porto Alegre, Brazil. That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Thanks for listening. This program was produced by Pauline Bartolone. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Making Contact is an independent production funded primarily by individual contributors. We are committed to providing a forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. If you'd like to support our work, or if you have suggestions for future programs, we'd love to hear from you. For a cassette or CD copy of the program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Rishen McKee, office manager, Dorian Taylor, outreach and distribution, Peggy Law, founding director, Norman Solomon, senior advisor, David Barsamian, national advisor, and I'm your host and associate producer, Justin Beck.